Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Janmadyasya yaton vayad itadatas chartish fabigyak swarat. Tene brahma vidaya adi kavaye muhyanti atsuraya. Tejo vadi midam yata vinamayo yatra trisargo misha. Dhamna svena sada nirasta kuhakam satyam param dhimahi.
Dhamna svena sada nirasta kuhakam satyam param dhimahi.
He is directly and indirectly conscious of all manifestations. And he is independent because there is no other cause beyond him. And is he only who first imparted the Vedic knowledge under the heart of Brahmaji, the original living being. By him, even the great sages and demigods are placed into illusion, as one is bewildered by the illusory representations of water seen in fire, or land seen on water. Only because of him do the material universes, temporarily manifested by the reactions of the three modes of nature, appear factual, although they are unreal. I therefore meditate upon him, Lord Sri Krishna, who is eternally existent in the transcendental abode, which is forever free from the illusory representations of the material world. I meditate upon him, for he is the absolute truth. Continuing in the purport, 2, 3, 4. In Vedic literatures, it is said that the absolute truth, personality of Godhead, is the chief amongst all living personalities. All living beings, beginning from the first created being, Brahma, down to the smallest ant, are individual living beings. Yeah. And above Brahma, there are even other living beings with individual capacities. And the personality of Godhead is also a similar living being. And he is an individual, as are the other living beings. But the Supreme Lord, or the Supreme Living Being, has the greatest intelligence, and he possesses supermost inconceivable energy of all different varieties. If a man's brain can produce a space satellite, one can very easily imagine how brains higher than man can produce similarly wonderful things which are far superior. The reasonable person will easily accept this argument, but there are stubborn atheists who would never agree. Srila Vyasadeva, however, at once accepts the Supreme Intelligence as the Parameshvara. He offers his respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Intelligence, addressed as the Para, or the Parameshvara, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that Parameshvara is Sri Krishna, as admitted in Bhagavad Gita and other scriptures delivered by Sri Vyasadeva, and specifically in this Srimad Bhagavatam. In Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says that there is no other para-tattva,
summum bonum. If you don't know Sanskrit, if you know Latin, then you can understand paratattvam means summum bonum. If you don't know Latin, that means the highest good. If you know Greek, to agaton, the good. Therefore, Sri Vyasadeva at once worships the paratattva, Sri Krishna, whose transcendental activities are described in the 10th canto. Prabhupada begins the purport, paragraph, saying, in Vedic literature it is said that the absolute truth, personality of Godhead, is the chief among all living personalities. There's a lot said in that one sentence. Vedic literature, Vedic culture, if you want to say religion, is different than others, other literatures, other philosophies, other religious cultures, other worldviews. It proposes, or it is based on the ideas that, first of all, there is one absolute truth. That's a big assumption in itself. Not everybody, not every culture acknowledges a single absolute truth. I'm studying because something about Thailand. I will be going there to try to do a little preaching. Their main problem is that they don't recognize an absolute truth. They have a very strong so-called religious culture. It's Buddhism, Theravada, or Orthodox Buddhism. But they're not really Buddhists. What's really going on under the surface of the Buddhism, and before that they had strong Brahminical, from India, Brahminical influence, before the Buddhists came, before the Buddhists were invited. The Brahmins of India were shaping the culture of this country. You can see in the language. The language is 25-35% of the words are Sanskrit and Prakrit words. But it's all covered and forgotten because they've adopted this Buddhism, this impersonalism. But actually, the religious culture of the country, under the surface, is worship of ghosts and spirits. And what they call animism. You know, people are concerned about evil influences, bad spirits attacking them, and they purchase and wear amulets and go to the Buddhist priests to get these amulets and have mantras chanted to get rid of the ghosts and spirits. This is their use of Buddhism. There are very few people who are seriously even understand anything what Buddhism is about, even among the priests, among the monks. And with such a mix-up of religion, officially Buddhist, ancient influence of Vedic culture from India, and under it, their primitive culture of worship of ghosts and spirits. With all this mixture, they don't have a clear idea about a supreme being, that there's one absolute truth uniting all this. No, they just don't recognize an absolute truth. There are these ghosts, there are good spirits, and they're bad spirits, and they're supremely good spirits like Buddha, and your mother is supremely good, and the king is supremely good. But there's no absolute truth. There's no idea of a single absolute truth, even an impersonal one. It's just so many different spirits, good ones and bad ones, and you gotta, make sure the bad ones don't get you and take shelter of the good ones. That's their idea of spiritual life. That's their culture. They don't recognize the absolute truth. So not everybody in the world, even not every culture, understands the idea of God, even an impersonal idea of an absolute truth. So that's radical. The Vedic literature and the whole Vedic culture is founded on the idea of one supreme truth, one supreme entity, which is the cause of everything, which controls everything. And then that para, satyam param dhimahi, is actually param eshvara. It is a supreme person. A controller means a person. We have sophisticated machines. We come to class with our computers. But who's really doing the thinking? The computer or the person who's sitting at the keyboard? I hope that the computers haven't taken over so much that they're doing the thinking and we're being controlled by the computers. No, it isn't that way. The controller is the person. Without intelligence, the machine doesn't work. Doesn't do anything without a controlling intelligence. And intelligence means person. So the word Ishvara, although it just means controller, that doesn't mean central processing unit, some other machine that controls the smaller machines, but it means a person. Living intelligence. Machines don't think. They can mimic thought. They can reflect thought. You can store your thoughts in the computer. The computer can permutate your thoughts and put them in different forms, but the computer doesn't think. Matter does not think. Only living intelligence thinks, has any consciousness. And only living intelligence can actually control. So modern science also has a conception of supreme absolute truth. So science is a bona fide religion. At least they recognize an absolute truth. But what's the absolute truth? You know, the unified field theory. You know, the laws of nature. It used to be Newton's laws, then it was Einstein's laws. Now they're trying to discover unified field theory that explains everything in three or four formulas. They haven't found them yet, but they're looking. And that's the absolute truth that is the source of everything and controller of everything. It's just laws of nature. But this is actually an absurd concept. How do you have well-planned or orderly law that creates and controls everything? Fantastic complex of order. It not only rules it, but it created it in the first place, brought it out of nothing, arranged it all, maintains it, and impels it, and even brings forth the phenomena of life and intelligence, but it is not alive. It has no intelligence. It's just mathematics, just nature. How can there be control? How can there be order without living intelligence? It's absurd to think that. If you have law, who wrote the law? Who made the law? It's a symptom of intelligence. That is order. Haven't you studied physics? The principle of thermodynamics? That left alone, and the closed system will tend toward chaos, not toward order. If someone intelligently controls, you know, prevents the chaos with his intelligence, okay. But without intelligent intervention, everything tends toward chaos. Where does the order come from if there's no intelligence? So satyam param, that para, must be parameshvara. And if it's ishvara, if it's controller, it must be person. Parameshvara means the supreme personality of Godhead. These words are not just some mumbo-jumbo formula that's good for advertising. New, super, ultra, special, brand new, you know, soap detergent. It's not just advertising formula. Supreme personality of Godhead, because that'll attract a lot of attention. People will flock to come see, the, you know, pay 25 rupees to come see the supreme personality of Godhead. It's like P.T. Barnum was the great showman. He made the circuses and the carnival shows in America in the 19th century. He's the one who said, there's a sucker born every moment, every minute. Never trust, never give an even break to a sucker. These were his consciousness. So he had his show. in some city, and it was packed. So many people were coming that the place was over. It was dangerous. There were too many people coming. Well, he didn't want to turn away customers, but he had to somehow get them out quickly. So he told them to put up a sign, "This way to the egress." So people would want to go, you know, go through that door and see the egress. Sounded interesting. Egress is a Latin word for exit. Yeah. So he got people out of the building by, you know, enticing them to come see the egress. Like that, we're not, you know, trying to bring customers. You know, oh, come see the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's some mumbo jumbo. No, that's the term. Is perfectly descriptive of the Supreme Absolute Truth. Perfectly appropriate, not just fancy words. Supreme, Pada, Personality, Parameshvara, Godhead, Purushottama, Supreme Personality, Supreme Person. Of course, Godhead is an old-fashioned word. Prabhupada is English as its roots. The English Prabhupada spoke, he learned from the British and the Scottish teachers in Calcutta. He went to the Scottish Church College and studied English poetry of the 19th century and before, because a lot of the English the Prabhupada uses has its roots in the 16th and 17th century. Very old English. Godhead. That's a word you can find in John Milton, you know, the 17th century poetry. For modern American speakers, it sounds strange, you know, some head floating in the sky, the Godhead, some ghost or monster. No, but it's an ancient term from 17th century British theology, meaning the Supreme Person. He's the head, the chief, and he's a person. Very apt term, but it's old-fashioned. Actually, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur used it, and therefore Prabhupada took it. So Prabhupada says in this sentence, in Vedic literatures it is said that the Absolute Truth, Personality of Godhead, is the chief among all living personalities. Well, it does say that in the Vedic literatures. What is Vedic literatures? This is a term Prabhupada uses. Do we understand properly what the Vedic literatures are? We have the original Vedas. Therefore, we're talking about Vedic literatures. Nigama Kalpa Toror. We have a body of literatures. We have the original Vedas, and we have other books too. We have the Upanishads, which are part of the Vedas, but they're philosophical. The Vedic Samhitas, that contain the hymns that are chanted in the sacrifices, are addressed really to the devatas. They're not meant for communicating with human beings, the original Vedic hymns. They're not written in human language. Human beings, really, it's not for our understanding. It's for the worship of the devatas that the Vedic hymns are there. There's a part of the Vedas that's addressed to human understanding, and that's the Upanishads. Human beings get their understanding of the Vedic message from the Upanishads. But they're also eternal Shruti. They're also an integral part of the Vedas. And then there are the other explanatory literatures that are also called Vedic Shastra. Because they, although they're written by various authors, they're not eternal. They're written by various sages at various times. But these supplementary Smritis are perfectly in line with the Vedic message. They're presenting the same message, as explained by various sages. The Puranas, the Dharma Shastras, the different sutras and other books, these are Vedic. So this whole body of literature Prabhupada refers to as the Vedic literature. Or even he uses the term Vedas, and by that he means to include the Upanishads. This is a unified corpus of literature. It's not that The Vedas have one philosophy, or one worldview. They were written by somebody. This is what modern scholars think. Somebody, some primitive poets, wrote the Vedas. And then 1,000 years later, or some years, hundreds of years later, a different culture, the Brahminical culture, wrote the Puranas. And then somebody else, you know, wrote the Bhagavatam even hundreds of years later. And these are all coming from different cultures, different authors, therefore different ideas. There's no congruence. Vedas are one thing, Upanishads are another thing because they come from a different age. Puranas are a whole different thing, and they're all different Puranas from different centuries. This is the modern viewpoint. There's no coherence. They will not accept that we're calling this all Vedic literature, or that this movement, Hare Krishna movement, is Vedic. They say Vedas are Vedas. You know, these nomads in the 3,000-4,000 years ago, they're Vedic. What are you? Why do you call yourself Vedic? You're some medieval bhakti cult. Yeah. No connection. They don't see the connection. But nigala kalbataror galitam balam. The Vedas are like a single organism. The whole Vedic literature. Like a tree. There's a big living entity. You have small living entities like this ant. And you have big ones like huge trees. A single organism, although it has many different parts, and they may be even distant. The roots and the leaves on the top branches of the tree. Maybe 150, maybe 80 meters apart. 100 meters apart, quite separate. But they are parts of the same organism. There is an integral connection. It's one living organism with one intelligence directing it. So that's why the example of, one of the reasons why the example is given of metaphor of tree. The Vedas are a desire tree because it has many parts, but the parts are all parts of the same one organism. Holistic viewpoint. It's all one being. Just like holistic medicine means you just don't deal with separate organs, and if it goes bad, you cut it out. But you deal with the body as a whole, the balance of forces within the body. That's holistic medicine. You try to keep things in balance, not just focus on individual organs and symptoms. Holistic. So the holistic viewpoint of the Vedic literature is that there's one intelligence, not multiple intelligence, one intelligence behind all this literature. It's all organized together. It all fits together. It's all congruent. What the Rig Veda says, what the Upanishads say, what the various Puranas say, what the Bhagavatam says, what the Dharma Shastras say, is all coherent. No contradiction. So Prabhupada says that the Vedic literature, in the Vedic literature, I'm still on the same sentence. In the Vedic literature, it is said that the absolute truth, personality of God, is the chief among all living personalities. Well, I know one statement in the Upanishads. Nityo nityanam, chetanas chetananam, ego bahunam yo vidadati kaman. Is that, which Upanishad? Kato Upanishad? Tritashrata. Kato Upanishad. Maybe it's in two Upanishads. Might be in both. There is one eternal among all the eternals. Nityo nityanam. Single plural. Eternal among the eternals. Chetanas chetananam. And he is conscious being among conscious beings. One living intelligence, eternal living intelligence, among all the other eternal living intelligences. God is a person, and all of us, we are persons too. And we're all eternal and conscious. Eko bhunam yo vidadati kaman. But he's the one, he's different. He's one who supplies the needs of all the others. The needs and the desires. No one, none of the other ones qualify like that. Only the one supreme person supplies the needs and wants of all the others. Eko Bahunam. Actually, if you take out a dollar bill, you can see a translation of that into Latin. E pluribus unum. That's the other way around. E pluribus. Pluribus is the ablative, not the ablative, the, yeah, ablative plural. Bahu biaha, from many, right? Panchami pavachana. So in Latin that becomes pluribus. E pluribus. A is the ablative preposition. Out of many, one. Because we talk about it, add many out of one. But this is out of one, out of many, one. That means that there were many different colonies and they were united to become one country. So that's almost the same words as Eko Bhunam. One among all the many. Same words. Yovididati Kaman, who supplies the desires, the needs of all the others. So there's the Upanishad saying what Prabhupada says. The personality of Godhead, absolute truth, is the chief among all living personalities. And you won't find a statement in the Vedic literature, in the Vedas, in the Upanishads, in the Puranas, that contradicts this. You may have statements that lead you to think that the Supreme is not a person, but impersonal. But you won't find any statement that he's not, that definitely he's not the Supreme among all living beings. You won't find that. You'll just find statements that seem to leave out the personality, that just talk about the Supreme in very generic terms. But you won't find a denial that no, he's not a personality. And he's not the Supreme among all persons. Do you see that anywhere in the Vedas? That the absolute truth is not a person? That Krishna is not the Supreme Godhead? You won't find that even in the Puranas that glorify Lord Shiva as Supreme. In the Shiva Purana, you'll find the description of the pastime of the battle between Nrisimhadev and Lord Mahadev. And Nrisimhadev loses. Loses the battle. And Mahadev proves himself supreme. But that's a pastime. Lord Vishnu, Lord Nrisimhadev, agreed to be defeated by his devotee. So that all the Shaivites can think that Lord Shiva is better than Lord Vishnu. Lord Vishnu is collaborating in this illusion. We understand it that way. But you won't find, even in the Shiva Purana or any other Tamasic Purana, a statement that, no, you know, Sutu Vacha or Vyasu Vacha, Vishnu is not God. You won't find such a statement. You won't find Lord Shiva ever saying that in any Purana, that I'm better than Vishnu. You won't find such a statement. There is no contradiction of the fact that the Supreme Absolute Truth Personality of Godhead is the Supreme among all living beings. He is a living being and he's the best of all of them. And you won't find anywhere a contradiction of the fact that the Supreme Lord, from whom all other forms of Godhead expand, is Sri Krishna. You won't find a denial of that either. Although you may find glorification of Narayana and of other avatars, but you won't find anywhere the authorities telling us that Krishna is not the original Godhead. Some acharyas may have their opinions, but you won't find in the Shastra the opinion that Krishna is not the Supreme Godhead. So it is true. But Prabhupada says in this purport, Prabhupada makes the first statement and then going down further in the purport, and that Parameshwara is Sri Krishna, as admitted in the Bhagavad Gita and other scriptures delivered by Sri Vyasadeva, and specifically in the Srimad Bhagavatam. You won't find any authentic denial that Krishna is the Supreme Godhead, the Supreme Absolute Truth. That this Satyam Param is Vasudeva, the son of Vasudeva. You won't find any contradiction of that. And if you look in the right places, you'll find affirmation of it. Look in the Bhagavad Gita. Vasudeva is telling it himself. Matat paratanam nanyat.
There's nothing better than superior to me. Kinjadasti Nidanjana. Mayi sarvamidam protam. Everything is resting on me like pearls on a thread. And what to speak of Srimad Bhagavatam? Krishna is definitely glorified as the Supreme. Krishna's tu Bhagavan Svayam. The commentators may try to reinterpret that, but it's clearly defended by Jiva Goswami and others. And it's being said that Krishna is the original Godhead. And therefore the Bhagavatam dedicates a good part of its text to the description of the pastimes of Krishna, especially in the 10th canto. Is Bhagavad Purana? It glorifies Bhagavan? Natsipa was not here? Asya Devata. Asya Devata is the sutra. Bhagavan is the noun, and another noun by tadita suffix is derived, Bhagavata. Now Bhagavata can be derived with various meanings, but the meaning when you talk about the book, Asya Devata, that which has such and such as its presiding deity. So the presiding deity or the object of worship of the Bhagavatam is Bhagavan. Therefore it's called Bhagavat by this tadita suffix, Asya Devata, meaning Asya Devata. That means the deity of it is this. So Krishna is the worshipable deity of the book Bhagavatam. Rather, Bhagavan is. But Krishna is Bhagavan. Krishna's two Bhagavans Svayam. Krishna is the Bhagavan himself, not just an expansion of Bhagavan. The name Krishna, if you count up the words in the Bhagavatam, I've tried it. I'm not saying that I did a perfectly accurate count, but I counted many years ago all the words in the Bhagavatam. And I listed them according to frequency. I have the list. Number 11 in frequency, among all the words in the Bhagavatam, is the word Krishna. It occurs 711 times. It's by far the most common proper name that occurs in the Bhagavatam, Krishna. Of course, sometimes Krishna is used generically. Sometimes, that we'll admit. It's used to mean just Vishnu in general. But often enough, it refers to Krishna. And this verse, Krishna's tu Bhagavan Svayam, Jiva Goswami is definitely of the opinion, and he has a lot to say to prove it, that Krishna here means Krishna, the son of Vasudeva and Devaki, not just Narayana. Krishna is the original personality of Godhead. And if you want further explanation, you can read Jiva Goswami's Krishna Sandarbha, where he proves that. And you can read Rupa Goswami's Laghu Bhagavatamrita, where he goes at length to prove that. That of all the expansions of Godhead, Krishna is the original and supreme. So Prabhupada is perfectly justified in saying this in his purport. It's stated in the Vedic literature. It's not a concoction. It's not a sectarian belief just. It is based on Shastra. Okay, are there any questions or comments? Yes, ma'am.
Which are not based on the Vedas, they are not so profound.
Let me just correct. I didn't really distinguish Vedas from the Vedic religion from all other religions. I distinguish from atheistic religions only. There are other religions that accept an absolute truth, other cultures.
Which don't accept the absolute
but
truth.
There are others that do, have an idea of an absolute truth. It's not the Vedic culture is the only culture that recognizes some sort of absolute truth. I didn't mean to say that.
Go ahead. I'm referring to especially so many religious organizations that are coming up.
Yes.
So they also have their own conception of what the absolute truth is, which is not based on the Vedas. So that what I wanted to point out to you is that all these ideas of the absolute truth, which are not based on the Vedas, they are very shallow, and any opinion that is formed from the Vedas, like any authentic, even impersonalism, if you take even this Shankaras, if you take it's very vast. There is a level beyond which what they say can't be simplified. Like even what Madhva proposed, or what we are speaking, they may be simple statements like the Jiva is the eternal servant of Krishna, but then there will be 100 other statements to qualify what is being said, how and to justify this, and the philosophical basis of this statement. It'll be very profound, but there'll be a level beyond which it can't be simplified further. Like,
yes.
Just like the Madhvas, many of them themselves, they are doing a mistake of calling what Madhva proposed as Dvaita Siddhanta. It's an attempt to oversimplification.
Yes.
But actually, Madhva himself, and also even Prabhupada refers to it as Tattva Vada, and Dvaita is just saying the difference. Maybe he emphasized Dvaita,
but he also recognizes non-difference, specific non-difference.
Yes, he recognizes. You say that Krishna, that the living entities are similar to the Lord. This is accepted by Madhva.
Yes. Yes. So.
Comment on this.
Well, okay. Well, no. I just add a little bit that there are other cultures, religious cultures, that are not based on the Vedas. They're shallow, and then there are some that are misinterpretations of the Vedas. They may be deep and complex, but they're wrong.
You were saying about the difference between the machines and the humans.
Yes.
I was hearing from Rasaraj, who's Bhaktivedanta Institute. He was saying that because mind is also a material entity, even though it may be subtle, it is possible for scientists to simulate an artificial mind that could thinking, feeling, feeling, all sorts of operations that human mind can do, because it is a subtle entity, subtle material entity.
No, but the mind, if you're talking about the mind, the material element, mind, buddhi, or manas, it doesn't have consciousness. It doesn't think, it doesn't feel. If it's material, it doesn't have any consciousness. Don't confuse. See, this is word jugglery. There's material mind and spiritual mind. So don't confuse the two. Especially don't do it intentionally to prove a point. The spiritual mind thinks, but that's a natural function. That's a quality of the soul, is that consciousness. And that spiritual mind is not different from the soul. The material mind doesn't have any consciousness, and it never will. You can't evolve it to a point that it will have consciousness, because the material mind can process information, but it can't think.
So even intelligence, mind, and the ego, those three doesn't have any autonomous...
When you're talking, if you have to clearly distinguish, you're talking about the material entities.
Yeah, material entities.
They have no consciousness, and they never will. Either the processor in my computer or the processor in my brain, they don't have any consciousness. My brain doesn't have any consciousness. There was one boy, a son of a life member. He had a bicycle accident, and his brain literally fell out of his head. And they put it back, but it was, you know, messed up. And they thought he wouldn't live because his brain was ruined. He survived. Not only that, he survived in perfectly normal consciousness. Technically, without a functioning brain. You know, so consciousness does not reside in the brain. It's a quality of the soul. The brain is just a machine that we use. Just like I can walk on my own 2 feet, but I also sometimes drive around in a car. But if I didn't have a car, I could walk. So the soul may use the body, it may use the brain, because you're in the material world, and you know it's hard to get around. So it's hard to think clearly in the material world. So you have a brain to sort things out, to process the senses, sensory perceptions, and so on. Brain is mechanically doing its function, but it's not conscious. Consciousness is reflected on it, but that's an illusion. You know, I can reflect, I can take a movie of, you know, we have a festival, we take a video of it,
and I can project it on the wall. The devotees are dancing on the wall, but there's no devotees on the wall. It's just light shining on the wall. There's no people on the wall. It's just a movie. Like that, you can reflect, consciousness seems to be reflected on the material elements. But those material elements, including mind and intelligence, are not alive. They don't have any consciousness.
So you're saying that unless scientists they simulate consciousness, even though they advance in artificial intelligence, they cannot simulate the mind intelligence also?
Well, okay, they should, you know, become, you know, correct their mistake and recognize consciousness. But they're not going to be able to manufacture consciousness, even if they correct themselves. If consciousness is a quality of the soul, and nobody can make a soul. No scientist can make a soul. So they can't make consciousness. Only place you're going to find consciousness is a living soul. And you can't manufacture those. Out of silicon or anything else. Well, that's Krishna's mystic power, that someone can live with little or no brain. Yeah, but Krishna can lift that conditioning. Krishna can help you transcend that conditioning. A yogi has transcended the brain. He's awakened his spiritual consciousness, a pure devotee. Has awakened his spiritual consciousness. He's not thinking with the brain. He's thinking with the soul. It can be done. It is done. That's the perfection of Krishna consciousness. To transcend the gross and subtle bodies, and awaken up your spiritual functions. So I don't know. This I just heard about this incident of the boy who fell off the bicycle. Maybe it was exaggerated. I got it wrong. Yes.
And Prabhupada was mentioning that intelligence.
Goats don't think intelligently, but he got back his regular consciousness, even though he had a goat's head.
Yeah, Prabhupada mentioned that the intelligence.
Anyway, that's good. It's good to know that the limitations of our defective brains can be transcended. We don't have to be discouraged that I can only go as far as my brain is capable. That I've got an IQ of, 84, and I'll always be stupid. No, you can become very brilliant, but you have to waken up your spiritual intelligence. Really, you can transcend. It'd be hard to live with no brain, but we have defective brains, all of us. Some of us have put harmful chemicals into our brains, or either alcohol or some other drugs. And we've destroyed good parts of our brains. Literally. So we have defective brains. God gave us a good brain and we went out of the way to destroy them in our youth. And still we're functioning. Krishna gives us back intelligence on a higher level when we practice Krishna consciousness.
In one anecdote of Prabhupada, I was saying how this Prabhupada said that this whole word instinct is invented by these people to ward off the underlying components of memory and guidance by the Paramatma. So they want to cover this off by this word instinct. But actually, if you dig into that word, there's nothing other than these things, other than memory from past lifetimes and Paramatma guiding from inside.
Yes.
So they won't explain all the responses and instincts. But maybe they can make a study of all the different responses that all conscious living entities do to different stimulus from nature. And then they can make something that very much resembles a conscious being.
They can, yes, but it's really consciousness that's directing life. They can try to write consciousness out of the picture and just make a model that describes it without the consciousness. The living soul, but it's really the living soul that makes a body alive. Remove the soul and the body is cannot function at all. It decays. It's dead. And that's a fact. You know, they can't take a dead body and by hooking up some electrodes make it come back to life. They can't do it. So as long as they're trying to explain life without the soul, it's erroneous. No matter how clever their explanation is, it's wrong. Okay. I guess we'll have to stop now. It's time for breakfast. Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jaya.